This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Leslie Aneka Arima is here with us. She's calling in from Minneapolis. She's the 2018 winner of the Bridge Award with her stunning set of short stories entitled What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky. She speaks to us from Minneapolis. Leslie, welcome to Washington.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And tell us, what is the Bridge Award and what does it do for you?
So the Bridge Award is a prize meant to foster cultural exchange between Italy and the United States. And so it's sort of a two-part prize where the Italian winners are selected and translated into English, and American winners are selected and translated into Italian. And so what that means for me is that my book will be available in Italian.
And you went to Rome.
Yes, I did, yes. And so, yes, yeah, so the Italian winners come to the United States to receive their prize, and the American winners go to Italy to receive theirs. And
well,
so that was a couple of weeks ago.
It was wonderful. I have read this book, and Leslie, I was blown away by it. I can't imagine what it will be like in different languages, but I'm sure the stories will remain. It is a stunning collection. What other languages are you... I heard that you had some other languages vying for this book. What are they?
Well, so there'll be a Dutch version coming out, a Spanish version coming out, and there is already Brazilian and Hebrew editions out.
Leslie, can you believe this?
It's unreal. I mean, yeah.
And tell us a little bit, Leslie, about your nationality, your origins of birth, and where you are now writing.
Yeah, so I'm born in Nigeria and grew up there and moved to the United States with my family when I was a teenager, when I was 13. And, you know, it's funny that, you know, this award is for American culture, and then here I am sort of like as a Nigerian, being this exchange between the United States and Italy. But, I mean, like, I think of myself as, well, I think of myself, I am American as well. I mean, I have an American passport as well as a Nigerian passport. It's funny because I am, when people ask me where I'm from, I'm both from Nigeria and from America. I'm both Nigerian and American. You know, I joke, say I think Nigerian-ish, American-ish, and that's who I am. And I think of like the sort of dual nationality as inextricable from me. I'm both at the same time. It's like asking me about my race and my gender. I'm both black and a woman, and they both exist at the same time, and there's no separating them. And I think of myself, I'm both Nigerian and American. Like, these are the two countries that have fed and influenced me the most, and these are the two countries that I claim and identify with, and I am both of those nationalities at the same time, and it's not something that can be separated.
She has been honored as a finalist for the National Magazine Award, the Kane Prize, the winner of the Kirkus Prize, the African Commonwealth Short Story Prize, the O. Henry Award, and the New York Public Library Young Lions Award. And this is for people who are not yet 35 years of age. What will you do by the time you're 70? Leslie, we are so proud of you. I have to tell about the good people who sponsored you. They are the American Initiative for Italian Culture, Casa della Letteratura of Rome, American Italian Institute in the United States, and the United States Embassy in Rome. So this is Leslie Aneka Arima, and we would love to hear a taste of your work.
Absolutely. So I will read very briefly from the beginning of a short story called Light. When Nebeli Okwara sent his girl out in the world, he did not know what the world did to daughters. He did not know how quickly it would wick the dew off her, how she would be returned to him hollowed out, relieved of her better parts. Before this, they are living in Portakot, in a bungalow in the old Abundo layout. The girl's mother is in America, reading for a master's in business administration. has been there for almost 3 years, in which her 11-year-old bud of a girl has bloomed. And Evelie and the girl have survived much in her absence, including a stampede at the market that separated them for hours, shoppers fleeing a commotion that turned out to be two warring market women who'd had just about enough of each other's tomatoes. They survived a sex talk, birthed by a careless joke an uncle had made at a wedding about the bride taking a cup of palm wine to her husband and leaving with a cup of, well, and the girl had questions he might as well answer before she asked someone who could take them as an invitation to demonstrate. They survived the crying scene of the girl's first period, where she proved to be as heavy a bleeder as she was a sleeper, the red seeping all the way through to the other side of the mattress. They survived the girl discovering this would happen every month.
Leslie, your sentences are reminiscent of F. Scott Fitzgerald. The lyricism truly, as well as the content, and you are worthy of more awards than you have been given. I understand, as reading, that each one of your stories you try to pattern after something that has influenced you. Would you tell us about that?
Yes, and it's not so deliberate in that I have a specific work in mind. But when I was writing the stories in this collection, even before I knew that I was writing a collection, I've read so much in various genres. Like, I'm no respecter of genres, and so I read everything: fantasy, science fiction, you know, capital L literary works, every book that I read, and I think that, you know, when we read, we learn storytelling, even if that's not what we think we're doing.
Mm.
And so every book I've read has sort of fed my literary, you know, it's like part of my literary ancestry. And I have specific interest in especially works of, you know, invention, speculative fiction, I mean, whatever the word is, magical realism, you know, whatever term is popular today. And you know, it feels as though, when I was writing, I wanted to write stories that paid homage to, you know, this literary ancestry. And so the works in the collection, you know, vary in tone from, you know, gritty realism to, you know, more inventive, fantastical premises. And it was important for me, you know, once I had written enough short stories, I realized that I had a book for that book to reflect, you know, every sort of movement, my own literary interests.
And that surely has happened. Story is of suspense, another is a love story, another is surreal, we have crime, we have relationship stories, and each one is like entering a different continent. But I do not understand how you can be so free in your writing and so unafraid. What is the matter with you? Don't you know there are readers out there? You act like no one's going to judge your work. You are absolutely the most liberated writer I have read this year.
Oh my goodness, that is very high praise. And you know, I feel as though, you know, there's so many areas in our lives that are essentially structured for the benefit of other people. So, you know, of course, you know, you go to work and you're earning a living for yourself, but you're working for, you know, toward like a larger goal of whichever organization is that you work for. You know, like a lot of different parts of our lives are patterned for other people, and I decided that with my writing, it's going to be entirely for me, and so I have to write as though I'm the only person in the room. There's nobody looking over my shoulder and checking my work, or else I wouldn't be able to do it if I even started thinking about judgment and what the reader might think. And I just rely on the hope that I'm a good enough person that I'm not going to write something that is just sort of truly awful.
Well, how long have you been writing?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. I remember being very young, and I thinking maybe, you know, younger than 12, and I wrote a you know, a sort of a retelling of Snow White in rhyming couplets.
Uh-huh.
Because that was the sort of kid that I was. And so I remember that.
Well, I believe writers are born. I really do. I think they come out wired a certain way. And your wires got beautifully crossed. Because I really am just thrilled with your originality. And I hope that it is parlayed into other languages because you use so many colloquial terms and African terms. I guess that they will just remain. Perhaps they'll just present those words as they are. For instance, the people's names.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, like, so the words will definitely stay. In terms of like colloquialisms, and you know, I've spoken to a couple of translators, and what they do with that is they will try to figure out what the meaning is, right? So, like, if let's say, it's not in the book, but let's just say, you know, for example's sake, a stitch in time saves nine, right? And so what that, you know, what it means is that, you know, and so, like, you know, they would find, okay, what does that actually, what does it mean? What's the writer trying to say? And then they would translate it into a version that is a translation of what it means and not exactly a stitch in time saves nine. And so it's fascinating, that sort of like the stamp that an individual translator will put on a work. But I wanted to rewind very briefly just to the question of, you know, like how long I've been writing. Because I realized that, you know, going way back that far was not entirely accurate, in that I think that when I seriously started writing is when I began to improve in the way that I wanted. And And so that's probably within the last 10 or so years. I just think of, like, you know, being a child interested in stories as the preparation for being a writer, for actually just sort of deciding this and, like, how serious I am. That was sort of more recent, the last sort of decade and a half.
Well, clearly, your DNA is on the page. This is someone who is not kidding around. You're in it for the long haul. You see the world through a paradigm unlike any other, and that is so precious and rare. So we would love to hear Leslie Eneka Arima talk about a little bit more. Give us some work.
All right. So this is an excerpt from a story called Glory. And it's about a very unlucky young woman, and she is visiting her grandfather, and he tells her a story.
Oh, I love this story.
Near the end of her last day, their conversation migrated to her fate. There is only disaster in your future if you do not please the gods, he said. The older she got, the more she felt the truth of it. The deep inhale her life had been so far, in preparation for an explosive exhale that would flatten her. Papa, you know I don't have it in me to win anyone's favor, let alone the gods. They were both dressed in shorts and singlets, the voltage of the generator too low to carry anything that cooled. Glory sat on the floor, shifting every half hour to savor the chill of cooler tiles. Her grandfather lounged on the bed. When he began one of his fables, she closed her eyes. A porcupine and a tortoise came to a crossroads where a spirit appeared before them. Carry me to the heart of the river and let me drink, the spirit said. Neither wanted to be saddled with the spirit, but they could not deny it without good reason. I am slow, said the tortoise. It will take us many years to reach the river. I am prickly, said the porcupine. The journey will be too painful. The spirit raged. If you do not get me to the heart of the river by nightfall and give me a cup to drink, I will extinguish every creature of your kind. The tortoise and the porcupine conferred. What if you carry me, said the tortoise, while I carry the spirit? We will surely make it by nightfall. I have a better idea, said the porcupine. These are no ordinary quills on my back. They are magic quills, capable of granting any wish. The only condition is that you must close your eyes and open them only after your wish has been granted. The tortoise and the spirit each plucked off a quill, eager for desires out of reach, and closed their eyes. That's when the porcupine snatched the quill from the tortoise and jammed it into the flesh of his throat. He filled the spirit's hands with the tortoise's blood, which it drank, thinking the gurgling it heard to be from the river. But spirits know the taste of blood. It lashed out at the porcupine, only to find that it could move no faster than the tortoise. The porcupine continued on his way. Her grandfather's long pause signaled the end. Are you hearing me? Yes, but what does it mean? If you can't please the gods, trick them.
The voice of Leslie Annika Arima, and she's the winner of the 2018 Bridge Award, which crosses cultures between Italy and America and is sponsored by the American Institute for Italian Culture, as well as in concert with organizations in Rome and the United States Embassy in Rome, too. Leslie, you even make up your own folklore. That's bold.
I mean,
that's bold.
Wait, what's the point if you can't do whatever you want? I mean, like that freedom, it's like you're inventing everything. There are no restrictions except linguistic ones, and even then you can mess around with those if you do it right.
I wish you could teach, because you are creating your own folk tales without the folk. I mean, you've created the folk and the tales and the countries they're in, and if you taught, that's all you would have to teach your students. What you just said, that's all. What else is there to teach, really?
Yeah.
Is that what you learned? Is that all you've learned from your studies in graduate school?
Yes and no. So when I graduated, I was a little bit bereft. I spent this time working on my writing, and I knew I wanted to have a career in writing, and I sort of had a moment where I was reading a literary magazine, and I read a short story that had received an award in the magazine, and I was blown away by the story, and I realized I had no idea what I'm doing. Because I didn't know you could do that. And so I realized like sort of how much I needed to learn. And so I took a break. I stopped writing, and I didn't write for a couple of years. And all I did was I returned to, I was a very avid reader in my youth, and I just took a break to read everything, every genre, books that were both like and extremely unlike anything that I imagined myself writing. The idea being that I was just absorbing all these different ways that storytelling can work, and understanding story, and just enjoying story, right? And just sort of steeping myself in language, intense self-directed study, and then only after those, it was almost 3 years, and after that I started writing the stories that appear in the book.
Well, Leslie, I have my eye on your prize, because I see it through all of your variations in this book. Your voice sustains. It's like a silver thread from the beginning to the end. And you do have, there is a Nigerian sensibility within that is an unusual thing to find amidst all the stories with your English braided through and all of your experiences. But there is definitely a voice that I would know if your name was never attached to it. So I think all the things you read came into one stream. They had to. Let's hear some more from this wonderful book. It's called What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky. And I think it's a bestseller, but I think you can get one if my audience would run out right now.
All right. So I am going to read from the title story. And I need to provide some context here. So this is a story that is set in a sort of futuristic version of this world. And in this world, flooding has consumed all of the continents except for Africa and Australia. And so countries former colonial countries have returned to the continent, and my character is a mathematician, and in this world, mathematics has evolved to the point where we can use it to essentially hack the human body and fix it and repair it. And she is a Greek mathematician. At some point, before the story starts, somebody decided to use the mathematics to attempt to fly and fell. And that's what it means when a man falls from the sky. All right. When things began to fall apart, the world cracked open by earthquakes and long dormant volcanoes stretched, yawned, and bellowed. The churches, mosques, temples fell, not just the physical buildings shaken to dust by tremors, but the institutions as well. Into the vacuum stepped Francisco Furcal, a Chilean mathematician who discovered a formula that explained the universe. It, like the universe, was infinite, and the idea that the formula had no end, and perhaps by extension, humanity had no end, was exactly what the world needed. Over decades, people began to experiment with this infinite formula, and in the process, discovered equations that coincided with the anatomy of the human body, making work like hers possible. A computer at the center ran the formula 24/7, testing its infiniteness. There were thousands and thousands of lines. People used to be able to tour the South African branch and watch the endless symbols race ticker style across the screen. Then the center closed to the public and the rumors started that Furcal's formula was wrong. The logic of it faltered millions and millions of permutations down the line, past anything a human could calculate in her lifetime, that it was not infinite. They were just that, rumors. But then a man fell from the sky.
Leslie, that is foretelling, I think, rather than imagining, because now so much is happening where quantum physics is proving that we are going to be able to do more than we can do. But the imagination of having a mathematician be able to measure grief and take it away from people. And that is what the story is about.
There's a point where she has to take her father's grief, and she can't because it's her own grief as well, and it's an intense experience.
Is that your favorite story in the book?
It's one of my favorite. Well, I don't know. It's like asking someone to pick who their favorite child is.
That's right.
Which I can do. I can do that. I mean, it's not one of my favorites in the collection. They're all so different that it's like they all offer something different.
That's true.
I think it's one of the most distinct stories in the collection because it's the only science fiction, futuristic science fiction story, and it's also the title story. It sort of draws a lot of the collection draws a lot of power from it.
That's true.
My favorite story is actually I would say it's the final story in the collection, Redemption. And I love that story because I started writing it in that period before I took my sort of 3-year intense study, I knew there was something wrong with the story, but I didn't know what it was, and so I just I put it away, and so when I started writing my intense self study and started writing again. I eventually came back to that story, and I was able to see what was wrong immediately. And it was something so satisfying of this sort of tangible evidence to myself that I had improved, I'd gotten better, and so it's a favorite for that reason.
Well, also it exemplifies one of your strong points, which is the study of relationships, because you are a keen observer of relationships, and they're not easy. Some of them are pretty harsh. So can we believe relationships are possible?
Yes, I do believe so. I mean, I am a pessimist. I'm probably the wrong person to ask questions about that require hope.
Oh.
So I do think they're possible. But I mean, you know, and I think that successful relationships are interesting, but when things go wrong, they can go wrong in so many different ways, and that gives us more playground to work with in terms of you know, writers sort of drawing from just like the observation of the world to find things to write about. And so I think that that's probably why I think that writers, especially literary writers, tend towards sort of doom and gloom.
Well, I think that wrong has more complexities in it than right. And so there's much more to find, which you have found. Now, I know that you're not going to tell us about your new work, but I'm guessing it's not short stories?
No, it's I'm working on a novel.
But yes, the thing is, the long run is going to be quite different for you to do the marathon.
I'm discovering how different it is to write a novel than it is to write a short story. And I think that it's because, you know, when I write short stories, there are various ways that I approach writing a short story, both just like the traditionally, just like, you know, sit down every day, do a little bit of, you know, work a little bit on it every day. But more popular for me is that I will have the concept, as a premise of the story, whether it's an image or, you know, something, or, you know, or having, you know, again, like these two, you know, these two disparate ideas, you know, a man falling from the sky and grief eating, and I'll just have it live in my head for some time, and I will just think on it, I'll chew on it, what I like to call the brewing process, just sort of brews in my head when I sort of work through, you know, plot logistics and character, the personality of the characters and things like that. Like, have it just all sort of floating around in my head for, you know, whatever amount of time, weeks, months, or in the case of one of the short stories in here, Who Will You Get Home, a year. And then it comes to a boil, essentially, to continue the metaphor. And then I just write it and get a first draft down in a burst of energy, and you know, that's something that you can do with a short story, but you cannot hold an entire novel in your head in the same way.
Wow.
I'm not a very like organized person, but been forced to learn the power of habit, essentially, the power of just like the daily grind of just sitting down and doing something every day, because that's the way the novel is going to happen. It doesn't happen in these bursts. I mean, parts of the novel can happen in the burst. I mean, I've had like really intense bursts where, you know, I've produced a lot of words, but it's the daily grind. It's the habitual writing that's going to get long works done. And as sort of somebody who is extremely disorganized, that has been a learning experience.
Very valuable experience. Very valuable words you're giving us, and we are richer for knowing you. We're richer for reading this book, and I would like to tell the audience the title once again is What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky, Leslie Aneka Arima. I am Grace Cavalieri, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. This is a conversation with the 2018 Bridge Award winner, and that's sponsored by the American Initiative for Italian Culture and the U.S. Embassy in Rome, as well as other agencies. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation, with the support from the Sinepid Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin, and I am Grace Cavalieri.